You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Today's episode brought your way by Built Bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On, and you'll get $10 off your next order. We've got a ton on tap with the Seahawks finally hitting the practice field on Wednesday. Let's get to it. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Throughout his time in Seattle, Coach Pete Carroll has consistently preached protecting the team. That is one of his three primary rules of team building. Everybody's got to abide by that. And that has never been as important as it is this season, trying to play through a pandemic. Players are basically in a makeshift bubble in Seattle, trying to eliminate exposure to COVID-19. And that principle has already been put to the test by an undrafted rookie earlier this week, and the front office quickly sent a message.
Yeah, unfortunately for Kima Sivarende, an undrafted free agent cornerback out of Oklahoma State, it was reported by Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network that Sivarende was basically caught trying to sneak in a female guest into the team hotel. And of course, with the COVID-19 pandemic, Corbin, everybody is going to be very concerned about wanting to keep any visitors away from the players. And so because he was caught doing that, as has been reported, then the Seahawks reacted by releasing Sivarende. And so I think that not only is sending quite the message to the individual player, it's sending messages to all the rest of the Seahawks and frankly, all around the league, because the story has come out and there is some details out there that people are going to have some fun with, but it's going to, unfortunately for the player, embarrass him a little bit. But I think that the one thing is going to be very clear is that in every NFL city out there, every player out there is now going to realize, wow, there are certainly going to be ramifications if you make any kind of mistakes that put the team at risk.
Pete Carroll talked about this recently, that the Seahawks want to set a good example for how to combat COVID-19 with how they're conducting their camp and trying to have a season. And up to this point, they have not had a positive test. John Ursua's was a false positive, and he was back on the practice field the last 2 days. And so far at least, knock on wood, they've been doing a really good job. And for a player like Sivarende, and I think I would be really curious how the Seahawks would approach this with a more established player, because then that would really put your principles to the test. But a player like Sivarende that is a fringe player that – probably doesn't have a very good chance of making the team. His best odds are probably being a practice squad player, especially considering he was mostly a special teams guy at Oklahoma State. A player like that makes a mistake like this. You always hear the term rookie mistake. This puts rookie mistake, gives a new definition for it, because this is something none of us have experienced before. You're used to seeing something like yesterday, Da'Vion Renfro, for example, was running a route as a scout receiver on offense, and he plays cornerback defensively, and he ran a really lackluster route, and then the coach in the background is just screaming at him, "I need an effort from you, Renfro." Those are the typical rookie mistakes you see. This is a totally different situation because, as you mentioned, not only was he caught on video trying to sneak a female into the team hotel, the female was wearing Seahawks gear in an attempt to disguise herself as a player. And I'm sure, as we can both imagine, unless we're talking about a very, very large woman, it's going to be very difficult for you to pull that off, trying to pull a charade that, hey, I'm with one of my teammates. It was very obvious to somebody instantly that was not the case. And the Seahawks, they worked swiftly here. And he's unfortunately probably now in a position, Rob, where he may never get another opportunity to play in the NFL. That might have been his one shot, and he blew it by making this big mistake.
Yeah, and that it really is the unfortunate thing about this. I mean, it's obviously kind of a comical situation as far as just the, some of the details that are coming out. But at the same time, again, I feel sorry for the young man because he had such an incredible opportunity here. I can only imagine, as an undrafted free agent, as you said, a player who did not play a lot, except on special teams for Oklahoma State the last 2 years. So he was very much at the bottom of the barrel in terms of the players who I thought had a realistic chance of making the active roster, perhaps as a on the practice squad. But to make this mistake and basically have his opportunity yanked away from them, I can't imagine there's going to be a number of other teams that are going to be willing to give him an opportunity, not only because of this egregious mistake, but also because, frankly, I just, again, didn't think that he had the experience and the production at the collegiate level to convince a lot of NFL teams that he was likely to make their roster.
And again, this leads me just kind of straying off Siverin's story specifically, but there is going to be a point where there is going to be a much more notable player that is going to break this rule of room visits permitted only by members of the traveling party that the NFL put on their NFL-NFLPA team travel protocol. There's going to be a more notable player that is going to push the line with that rule. And the big question is going to come down to, what is the team going to do for punishment at that point? It's much easier to release an undrafted player like Siverin, who probably was already not going to be making this roster to begin with. But what if, and I would never see this happening, but what if Bobby Wagner decided that he was going to bring in some random chick into a hotel room? What do you do at that point? You know, do you suspend him? Do you fine him? You know, you wouldn't think that the Seahawks at that point would be like, nope, we're done, you're released, with a player of that caliber. And so, again, this is one of those things where talent earns you opportunities. And for a player like Siverin, it's going to be very difficult to get another chance making a mistake like this.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the just kind of unwritten rules about sports, at least with the coaches that are willing to be honest about it. It is, as you said, I mean, talent kind of rules the game. I mean, I think that Pete Carroll certainly has been willing to acknowledge that, you know, some of his top players, his most trusted players, they may have different rules than some of the other guys. And so if it were to be one of your most trusted and reliable players, and then they made some type of a mistake, then I think that there very likely would be some type of a closed door meeting. I certainly don't think that it would get out the way that it did in this case. Again, I do believe that part of this is absolutely sending a message to the rest of the team. At the same time, I also, again, think that it is just so unfortunate, because what an opportunity this young man had and essentially gave away. But at the same time, I mean, this is the difference between the amateur athletics and the pros. And I think that's one of the ways that the Seahawks have set themselves up a little bit differently than a lot of the other clubs. We talked about this, you know, pretty endlessly throughout the whole draft process, or at least immediately after the draft, about how the Seahawks seemed like they were so focused in on players who did have, those leadership traits. That was something that they very much prioritized. And we've talked about that in the past. Every club likes to say that their players were leaders, but it just felt like that was more of a focus this year with the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think that this is just an indication of that the Seahawks thought, hey, this is a young man who made a mistake. He's gone. And for everybody else on this team, that is a team that is full of of character guys and a strong leadership core, I think that you have to just rely on them to be able to kind of huddle the masses and be able to bring it back to what, again, is most important, the team.
Again, it all comes down to the talent level, as whether that's fair or not. If a player like Bobby Wagner would have done this, it would have probably been viewed as a teaching lesson. Let's bring in for a closed door meeting. Don't do it again. Slap on the wrist. If you're a player that is just barely on the roster and you're just trying to fight for your NFL life, you don't have any margin for error. As you said, it's unfortunate, but hopefully the young man learns from this and will get another opportunity at some point to play professional football, maybe in the XFL. They're bringing it back potentially. Certainly an egregious mistake that he's going to be paying for quite some time. When we come back in the second quarter, let's talk actual football, because we finally had on-field practices. We're going to look at some day one and day two takeaways on the offensive side of the football. When we come back, you're listening to Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited, until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar.
Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. You will also receive a free cooler with your first purchase while supplies last. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. We finally had football after months and months of uncertainty. No OTAs, no mini camps. The Seahawks were finally back on the field, strapped up with their helmets. They were out there catching passes, running through drills, coaches barking, tons of energy. Obviously, no fans, which was a huge difference compared to a normal Seahawks training camp practice. But honestly, Rob, being there, you know, for the most part, it felt like a typical NFL off-season practice, a normal OTA, so to speak, and they're trying to phase into full contact of the practices, but it really did feel like a true football practice. And if you didn't know there was a pandemic going on, you would have thought, you know what, it's late July, early August, and the Seahawks are back. It felt fairly normal, other than the masks that all the media members and coaching staff were wearing at the practice. Otherwise, it felt pretty normal.
Yeah, and it looked pretty normal for the most part on the broadcast, whether it was on live at Seahawks.com or the Q13 television broadcast. Other than, of course, as you just mentioned, the fact that so many people, media, as well as players, coaches, were masked up, virtually at all times, except when they, you saw sometimes when the players would, when they put their helmets on, they weren't wearing their masks. But in some cases, they were then too. Yes, it looked like an OTA practice. I mean, you saw Russell Wilson, feathering in some of those gorgeous passes down the seam. You saw the new flashy offseason addition and Greg Olsen make a couple of nice catches. John Ursua making his triumphant return back onto the field after that false positive COVID test from before and making a spectacular one-handed catch. So, yeah, you could just get your competitive juices flowing. And of course, as you just mentioned, the most important thing is it did feel like real football again finally.
And this is going to be a really interesting show because you and I have different perspectives here. I was at the field. I was at the practice. And the way things are set up right now, media members have to be socially distanced. And so I was only able to get a close-up view of the defensive practice field. The offensive players were on the other field, the far one. And so I was able to take a gander over there a few times. I was able to see some nice plays. I actually got to see John Ursua make a wicked one-handed catch, which the Seahawks ended up posting on social media. That was one thing that I was able to take in from my location. But for the most part, I was keeping a close eye on the defense because that was the group of players that was in front of me at practice. That being said, looking at these first couple of days, first thing that I'd like to break down, the running back group, they don't have Rashad Penny, which we knew. Penny's on the PUP list. He's actually still trying to get through his testing and his physical so that he can return and be involved with the team in the facility. That has not happened yet, at least yesterday, according to Pete Carroll. And Chris Carson is out of town right now. He's dealing with a pretty significant personal issue. So it's uncertain when he is going to be back in the practice field. And so right now you've got 3 running backs with 1 combined start in Seattle. Those are the 3 guys out on the practice field right now. A great opportunity for Carlos Hyde to cement his status as the number 2 running back. And of course, former Hurricanes Travis Homer and DJ Dallas, both players that Pete Carroll was absolutely gushing about yesterday with their versatile games they bring to the table, their special teams ability. This is a great opportunity for both those guys to be able to get a lot of reps early in training camp with Carson and Penny not being there.
it is a great opportunity for them. As we were talking in the first quarter about a young man who made a terrible decision and basically just ruined his possibility of making the Seahawks roster, you cannot get a better opportunity if you were a player like DJ Dallas, just considering the fact that Travis Homer made some very impressive plays a year ago. DJ Dallas, as intriguing as of a talent as he is, I think that he's got to be looking at himself as on the outside looking in at this point. But then he has this wonderful opportunity here in front of him with Chris Carson out because of family issues. And we knew to kind of expected that he might not be ready to hit the ground running due to the crack hip injury that he suffered a year ago. But that doesn't seem to be the case here. This is about family issues away from the team. And of course, Penny being on the pup list with his knee injury. So what an opportunity for these three backs. We know what you have, or at least anybody who's been watching the NFL for the last couple of years knows what you have with Carlos Hyde. He is a big, burly back who has better speed than you might think for a 230-pounder, but plays with the physicality that the Seahawks are looking for as far as a lead back. If we were starting the season right now, I think that Carlos Hyde easily would be their lead back, their number one guy. Travis Homer showed spectacular hands, spectacular pass protection a year ago. I'm eager to see if he is even bigger this year, because that was one of the knocks on him, is he's more in that 205-pound range, is a little bit more of a change of pace back. And then Dallas is kind of the combination of the two. So again, to me, that's one of the things that is so exciting about that, is that we are talking about actual football, and all three players have an opportunity to get a lot more reps than they would have during a normal year.
It was really exciting to see in day one of training camp that Will Dissly was out there running routes and catching passes, obviously not running at full speed. A lot of the guys looked like they were going through the motions at times yesterday, and that's to be expected when it's your first on-field practice. Guys are just trying to get their feet under them. That's why they're phasing it this way, to get back into the more physical football practices that are going to start on Sunday. The Seahawks are going to be phasing back into that here, but I don't think anybody a few months ago anticipated, given the circumstances, even with the fact Dissly was able to make a miraculous recovery last year from a torn patellar tendon, I don't think anybody thought that Big Will was going to be full go, ready to go on day one. And obviously they're going to be cautious with him. There's going to be some times that they're going to take the foot off the pedal a little bit just to protect him from himself, because we know Will Dissly is one of those guys that wants to be out there all the time getting better. Again, another really strong recovery. He passed his physical, and you could see him out there catching passes. And Greg Olsen, I know he's 35 years old, but you could just see on the field yesterday just how slick of a route runner that he still really is. He's still a very good athlete for that position. Made a couple of nice catches down the seam. I'm really curious to see what that Wilson to Olsen connection is going to look like once they start mixing in more team-related drills and scrimmages as we get deeper into training camp.
Yeah, I think that tight end position is going to be one that we're going to have to talk about a lot, just because the talent and the versatility of this, the versatility and diversity of that group. I mean, you really do have a lot of different size, shape, speed of players there. And yes, I mean, just starting off with Dissly, I think that had to be the most positive thing about practice yesterday. Other than the fact that, of course, that it was just real football, but Dissly and his recovery is absolutely phenomenal. It's inspirational. It's everything that you want, you know. And so I'm very excited to see what he is able to do. And yes, I absolutely echo your sentiments on Greg Olsen. I mean, just look like a different level of a player out there. I mean, just how smooth he is. It popped off the TV for me, and just how easily he catches the ball. I mean, it just looks effortless. It looks like the ball is like his fingers are sucking the ball out of the air, kind of a thing, and because it just like goes into his hands naturally. He doesn't have to look it in. It's just easy, tuck the ball away, run away, and still showing some good moves out there. So still showing his athletic ability. So that all those things were intriguing. That said, the tight end that actually looked the most athletic, which is perhaps not surprising, but it was the Jacob Hollister. And again, I say not surprising considering that he was Seattle's third leading receiver a year ago. The team did bring him back, giving him a second round tender. So clearly they're very excited about what he can bring to their team. On the flip side, watching the tight ends today, I thought that Luke Wilson looked like the veteran that he is. Maybe he's kind of ramping himself up slowly, but I didn't see that same burst. And unfortunately, with Stephon Sullivan, a player you know, Corbin, I'm very, very high on, I did see a drop ball today just against there. And that's certainly something that you want to see him be able to catch the ball as cleanly as possible, especially for a player who didn't get as many opportunities at LSU.
And he's going to be fighting for a roster spot, especially if they're going to have him playing tight end, which is what Pete Carroll indicated yesterday. With all the talent they have there, Colby Parkinson sounds like he might be very close to making his return to the practice field, which would be an earlier return than many expected. So there are a lot of bodies at that position. Now, here's the disclaimer. When we're talking OTA-style practices, if there's a position group that is basically impossible to evaluate, it's the offensive line. The only thing that we really know at this point, Rob, is which four or five guys are in the mix there cemented as starters. We've got one position that already looks like maybe, just maybe, there will be a competition, but we saw Damian Lewis today at right guard, Brandon Shell at right tackle, no surprise, and then on the left side, Mike Iupati still holding that spot at left guard and at left tackle. They've had Dwayne Brown there, but Dwayne Brown, I was reading on Twitter, I was not at practice today, but sounds like he might not have been there necessarily. We know he is going to be the starter on that left side. Really, right now, the one that's starting to look like it might get interesting through the first couple days, the center position, B.J. Finney was mentioned by Russell Wilson as a starter there, but Ethan Posick was getting some snaps with the first team unit today.
Yeah, and with Dwayne Brown specifically, again, I was watching on the television network I did see Dwayne Brown go out there on the practice field at first. He looked terrific, by the way. He looked very much in shape. He looked, not that that's anything surprising, but he was on the field today, at least for a moment. I don't know if he did the entire practice or anything of that nature, but he definitely was there. But then more importantly, at the center position, as you talked about, I mean, with Finney and Posick, I think that's going to be fascinating. I mentioned Kyle Fuller as a deep sleeper. I mean, this is not a guy that I had a overwhelming grade on when he came out of Baylor a couple of years ago. Obviously, Posick is the guy who is the incumbent in a lot of ways because he has the most experience. I mean, he's been in Seattle all this time, and Finney, of course, is a free agent signed away from the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that, to me, along the offensive line, if we are to assume that the rookie Damian Lewis is going to be able to lock down that right guard position, and it looked like certainly that the Seahawks are expecting him to be their starter, at least on paper at this point. I'm really excited to see what Jordan Simmons and Phil Haynes, some of the other players might be able to do there. But yeah, as you mentioned, it looked like the Seahawks were already starting to rotate at the center position. And so I think that's going to be one that we're definitely going to have to focus in on.
Yeah, that's going to be the position group until we actually get pads on. It's going to be really tough to gauge where things stand, especially considering they haven't had reps at all this offseason and yet so many new faces. So while you can evaluate receivers catching passes, running backs cutting through drills, tight ends, it's really tough to evaluate offensive linemen during this time when they're just running plays on air for the most part. When we come back for the third quarter, we're going to switch gears to defense, some takeaways from the first two practices for the Seahawks in training camp. A lot of exciting developments on that side of the football early on. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang for our Thursday episode. We've now had two practices in 2 days. Football finally back on the field for the Seahawks. And it was really cool yesterday seeing the energy. Obviously, as Pete Carroll said, these players and the coaches, they were so anxious and they were so excited to finally have a chance to play the game that they're so passionate about when they've been stuck doing Zoom meetings for the last several months and doing individual workouts. Some of them braved having group workouts, even though the NFLPA was suggesting don't do that. We know Russell Wilson was throwing passes to DK Metcalf, and several other guys were working out together as well in the Seattle area. These guys haven't had a chance to really play team-related practices until yesterday. And on defense, you could see that energy out there. And I'll tell you, Rob, right off the bat, there is nothing that made it feel more like Seahawks football was back than hearing Clint Hurt out there just chirping left and right, yelling at guys. The energy that he brings, that's when you know, hey, it's really here. We've really got Seahawks football back.
Yeah, he's such an enthusiastic coach, and I think that's one of the reasons why he is as popular as he is with the Seahawks and frankly all the NFL. You know, so that is a kind of a welcome sound and sight to see Big Clint Hurt out there getting everybody excited. You know, to me, unfortunately, I have to kind of disagree though as far as the enthusiasm about it. I'm very excited about the Seahawks in general this season. I'm of course very excited about the Jamal Adams addition, especially you get Quentin Dunbar there in the secondary. But one of the first takeaways I had is the fact that your second round pick, Daryl Taylor, was on the sideline. And then you have Alton Robinson, your fifth round pick, a player who I think should have been drafted earlier, but the reason why he fell down is because it fell down the board is because he had a disappointing senior season amid concerns about his work ethic, and he is basically called out by Pete Carroll as being a little bit overweight. And you know, that's one of the reasons why you've got me on your program, Corbin, is my job is to basically be able to try to evaluate talent, and I feel like I'm pretty good at being able to kind of size players up and who looks bigger, who looks stronger, who looks faster. I thought Alton Robinson looked probably 10 pounds heavier than the 264 he weighed in at the combine. I mentioned the same thing on my article on Seahawk Maven at Seahawk SI about DK Metcalf. And while I'm excited about the fact that he is looks big, and it, maybe that's all muscle, but at the same time, we saw the situation with Shaquille Griffin a couple of years ago where he bulked up a little bit during his second season in the NFL and wasn't quite as successful. So, again, that's a little bit of a red flag for me with DK Metcalf. It's very much a red flag for me with Alton Robinson and Daryl Taylor. And while, again, I'm excited about some of the other additions that Seattle brought in with Benson Mayoya and Bruce Irvin, I think that they are going to be able to add to Seattle's pass rush. I think it remains to be seen. How is this team going to be able to build upon a defensive line that we know was one of the biggest areas of concern a year ago? Certainly in the first 2 days of these OTA type of practices, I have not yet seen any indication that we've seen that we're going to see a big improvement, especially considering that two of the players I was most excited about, the two rookies, I don't know what kind of impact you can expect for them right now.
And rookies are just, it's so questionable what you're going to get from them to begin with because they haven't had their OTAs and minicamp practices, and they're not going to get preseason games. I mean, this is the worst case scenario for incoming rookies to be able to make an impact. And if you're coming back from surgery like Daryl Taylor is, and it doesn't sound like he's going to be on the field for a few more weeks, and then Alton Robinson, I'm going to have to agree with you. That is one guy that I saw yesterday. I thought he looks way bigger than I anticipated, and not necessarily in a good way. And you didn't necessarily see the burst from him that I was expecting in drill work. Now, the guy I did see burst from, the guy that was just electric in all the drill work yesterday, was Benson Mayoa. And they did some shed and rip drills. They had a drill where they were working with two hula hoops. And they were trying to catch another defensive end. And both times, Mayoa caught the guy in front of him. So you could just see the burst. And I'm really excited because that was something that jumped off in this film the last couple of years. This is a guy that when he pins his ears back and he turns the corner, he's electric. And the Seahawks just didn't have a guy that consistently could do that for them last year. So I'm excited by what I saw, first impressions from Benson Mayoa in his second stint with the Seahawks. And Rasheem Green, you want to talk about a player that going into year three looks like he took his offseason very seriously. Chiseled is the best word to describe what Rasheem Green looked like. He was moving well. His upper body, he just looks much stronger. And he's only 23 years old, so this may be when he's starting to really come into his own. And he's been getting the reps at that five-tech spot with the starters in the first 2 days.
Yeah, Rashim Green is the player that I definitely was going to highlight as well. Is a guy that I just think looks like he's in fantastic shape. He looks like a guy who's about to, be able to take his game to a next level. So certainly, again, with the normal caveat that we're watching OT practices, they don't have their full pads on, they're not hitting, but certainly looks the part of an athlete that is going to be able to take that next step. And you mentioned his age. I mean, he was just a pup when Seattle drafted him, but he looks like a big dog now, and so I'm really excited to see what he's going to be able to bring. And then speaking of big dogs, I talked about him before. I thought that Brian Monet might be a sleeper for Seattle, and he was a guy that I thought, wow, he certainly looks lighter. And I just kind of speculated on Twitter and as well as on the article that he had to be at least 20 pounds lighter, and I've since received confirmation from team source that in fact he is at least 20 pounds lighter. And Aaron Levine in the television coverage today referred to him as being 345 pounds after being listed at 366. That's significant, and so we talked about so much how the defensive line is going to have to be able to, make strides this year. I wonder if, rather than being able to try and find some big flashy free agents, we know some of the names that are still out there. We've talked about them ad nauseum. This may be a case where the salary cap, where it is and where we are at the season, where we are with COVID-19, where Seattle basically is just saying, hey, we've got to go with the team that we already have, the young guys we already have. And so the players that we just mentioned, Green's hopefully stepping up, possibly LJ Collier stepping up, Monet stepping up. And then DeMarcus Christmas is another one that, of course, last year was basically just thrown under the rug. I'm curious if these young defensive players are going to be the ones who are able to kind of build up Seattle's defensive line from the inside out.
And Collier, I'm glad that you mentioned him, because yesterday at practice, he was getting a lot of work with their second defensive line. He was next to DeMarcus Christmas. He was playing the 3-tech 4-eye alignment at defensive tackle. They reduced him inside. He's listed at 291 pounds right now. And I will say this, I thought LJ Collier looked leaner yesterday, just from first glance, than what we saw as a rookie. And that's a great sign. He's leaner, but he's still in that 290-pound range. And we know he plays with heavy hands. The number of snaps that he's already getting there, they're going to be looking at veterans. That is going to continue to be something that they're going to explore. But it looks to me like, at least in passing situations, that's something that they are going to be prioritizing, getting a look and seeing, can he become that guy that fills the Quentin Jefferson role from the last couple of years, where he can play 5-tech defensive end and we can reduce him inside and he can be an effective interior pass rusher. I think that's where you're going to see sacks come from LJ Collier for the most part. He might occasionally get one as defensive end, but you put him at defensive tackle, he is a plus athlete at that position and has the size to be able to play consistent snaps there.
And the size, you mentioned the heavy hands, the strength, just the toughness. I mean, that's what I always liked about Collier the most. I mean, when I scouted him at TCU and then in person at the Senior Bowl, I didn't see a dynamic athlete. And I think that's what a lot of Seahawks fans out there are hoping that he's going to become. He's not going to be that guy who's going to be able to scream off the edge, And I think that some of the comparisons to Michael Bennett, unfortunately, were a little bit unfair, because he doesn't have that initial quickness as well. But Quentin Jefferson, I think, is a little bit better comparison there in that he does use his hands well. He does have some positional versatility. He is strong at the point of attack. And I think that he is going to wind up being a solid player for the Seahawks, just not necessarily a superstar. And that, to me, might be the strategy that Seattle takes here, is because with the way that they have allocated their funds, they don't necessarily have the space to be able to do much there. It's going to have to be kind of a team approach along the defensive line, and then have your superstars at the back level. And while that doesn't make the most sense in the traditional football that has been played for forever and ever, in the way I like to play the game, frankly, at the same time, the NFL is shifting away from the kind of football that I like to play, And so to me, in some ways, it does make sense to have your salary allocated in the back half. And that there is, if you want to make an argument that Seattle has the best linebacking core, the best secondary in the NFL, make whatever arguments you want, but I don't know if there's a back seven that's any better than Seattle's. And so if that's the way you're going to run, then your defensive line is going to have to be able to at least keep those offensive guys, you know, the blockers off of those linebackers and defensive backs.
Let's talk linebackers, because as we've hit on so many times during the offseason, this is a group that was already a strength for the Seahawks. And then they go out and use a first-round pick on Jordan Brooks. They re-sign Bruce Irvin, who, by the way, has been taking the bulk of the snaps at Sam linebacker the first 2 days, just like Pete Carroll and Irvin himself were saying that he was going to do. So they've had him. They've had KJ Wright out here. Wright avoiding the PUP list. He made a miraculous recovery from shoulder surgery. You've got Bobby Wagner in the middle. So right now, as you would expect when you start training camp, you are going to have that experienced unit with three guys that have played a lot of games in this defense. They have a great comfort level, and all three of them have differing skill sets that fit their respective positions extremely well. And that's going to mean Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton and Ben Burkervin, players like that, Shaquem Griffin, they are going to be having to vie for their time on the field as second-team players. And some of those guys could probably start for other teams, but this is a really, really deep linebacking group here. And in particular with Shaquem Griffin, I know Pete Carroll mentioned he's an outside linebacker yesterday, but today was the second day in a row where most of the clips that I saw with him were him working with the defensive line. So whether Carroll wants to admit it or not, that is going to be where Shaquem Griffin is going to make his greatest impact, is as a situational pass rusher. He's looking fast as ever on the field right now. So he's going to get his chances there. Bruce Irvin was getting some work in as well. You would expect that. He's played a lot of defensive end in his career. So they've just got so much flexibility here. And I would anticipate once we start seeing these guys hitting each other a little bit on the practice field and we start seeing more legitimate looking training camp style practices, then we'll get to really get a sense where Jordan Brooks and Cody Barton, some of these young players, really fit in. These first couple of days, it's really been a lot about teaching the young guys, getting them some reps, and letting the veterans be the ones that are getting the first team reps to this point.
Yeah, exactly. And as you said, I mean, not only Pete Carroll, but Bruce Irvin as well, both basically proclaimed that he was going to be the starter at the strong side linebacker position. And so we should not be surprised that that's where he's lined up these first 2 days of practice. But, you know, one of the kind of sneaky stories that I don't think a lot of people are kind of talking about right now is obviously we have a limited training camp. Their NFL is trying to kind of ramp things up as quickly as possible and then be able to jump into the regular season with a, you know, limited preseason, all that kind of stuff. And so what I'm concerned about is of those players who are a little bit older, if that doesn't just aggravate their age that much more, if those bumps and bruises just really start to break down some of those older players. Now, there is not a tougher guy, more reliable guy on Seattle's team than KJ Wright, than Bobby Wagner, but these are our veterans. And so I'm sure there's some out there that are considering, hey, the Seahawks have not got much bang for their buck for their early round picks that they've had, you know, and now they have they used their first round pick in Jordan Brooks, and, you know, right off the bat, and, you know, in the first couple of days of training camp, he's not even starting. And I understand that, but I think that the genius of that pick is going to be played out if Seattle does have not only the genius of the pick of Brooks, but of Ben Burkervin, of Cody Barton, the speed that Seattle now has at linebacker. So if there are any types of injuries to your clear starters, then you have legitimate speed behind them. They may not be as reliable in terms of their instincts, in terms of their technique, in terms of their run fits, but damn it, they can run. And at least you have that. And again, considering the fact that you're playing against the teams you are in this division, especially the Rams, especially the Cardinals, then you have to be able to run against the variety of different athletes that they have out there. And I think that that was very much part of the thinking of why Seattle did what they did and why the linebacking core, as talented as it is, I think that it's not only their talent, it's the depth that they offer is why that's still, in my opinion, Seattle's strongest position.
I will say this. I am very excited to see what Jordan Brooks looks like when we see more practices where they're actually hitting each other, running around the field, and there's some contact out there. Because I'll tell you what, that dude – he looks like he can probably squat a house. He is just a totally different body type than Cody Barton. And Barton obviously is a very athletic linebacker, but Brooks just, I mean, he's got huge legs. You could see that yesterday, his natural ability dropping back in coverage. I know that was something that people scoffed at coming out of the draft process, but you can see how naturally athletic he is going into his drops and stuff. I want to see what he looks like once they are in shoulder pads and they're out there and they're hitting a little bit, because I have a feeling then we might start to get a sense that maybe he can start pushing for some reps with that first unit at that point. The first couple of days when you're doing basically glorified walkthroughs, it's very difficult to be able to move up, especially when you're a rookie. It's getting your first couple practices in, you're just trying to absorb the scheme more than anything. Got to see what it looks like once he's got the defense down and he's able to just go out there and just play football. I'm really excited to see that. Real quick, we didn't get to see Quentin Dunbar yet. He might be on the field tomorrow. Sunday, probably the most likely time that he's going to be on the field. He's still trying to get through his COVID testing as well as get his physical done so that he can return to practice and join his new team. But we did get to see Jamal Adams yesterday. And I will say this, didn't get to see him hit anybody, obviously. That's not something that we've seen yet. Did get to see him blitz a few times and drills. But what I was blown away by, and we heard Pete Carroll talk about it after practice, he was constantly in different coaches' ears. He is trying everything that he can right now to get everything from this defense. He wants to master it as quickly as he can, and Carroll was talking about it. He is constantly wanting to be coached, and you got to wonder if that was the biggest reason that he wanted out of New York, that he felt like, I'm not getting the coaching that I need to be the best player that I can, and he's trying to pull everything he can out of this really good defensive staff in Seattle that's done such a great job over the years developing elite defensive backs.
Yeah, it's funny. There's an old expression. It's kind of silly, but, you know, Tigers don't change their stripes, you know, and of course, LSU Tiger here with Jamal Adams. I mean, he's just proving everything that I thought that he would be in terms of the leadership, the competitiveness, the wanting just to soak everything in. You know, you think that in New York City, where they basically were laughing at the Seahawks, thinking that, oh, you gave up two first round picks for a guy who is, you know, arguing or talking about possibly, or the speculation was that he might hold out and all this kind of stuff. I mean, the ultra competitive guy that Jamal Adams is taking all of that and just using that as more fuel to the fire. So to me, he is showing that he is exactly what he had been previously, a superstar player who not only is physically gifted, just takes the game as seriously as just about anybody out there. And as you mentioned with Jordan Brooks, I mean, just the first impression is just the speed, the strength, the size that you mentioned. Obviously, you're not, you know, at linebacker, the most important thing is you have to be able to tackle guys, and we can't do that just yet. But in terms of just passing the eye test, oh my goodness, and you can understand why he is a first round pick. So yeah, those are absolutely two of the biggest takeaways, two of the most positive things I saw for the Seahawks on the defensive side of the ball over these first 2 days of training camp.
And we are going to be transitioning into that next phase where they get shoulder pads on, and things are going to get a little bit more real here in coming days, which if you're a defensive player, you're chomping at the bit. These guys have been waiting a long time to start hitting again. And so they're going to get their opportunity on Sunday. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by visiting our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on our Friday episode, I'm going to be joining Nick Lee. We're going to take a deep dive into several positional battles that are already underway 2 days into training camp. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks!